Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties, Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hello, listeners. We are so excited to be here with another Kindle Unlimited book recommendation episode.
Yay!
Asking, you shall receive.
That's right.
We did not realize how popular these episodes are.
Yeah.
But we always love doing them. So
yes, they're so
we
fun.
We promise to do more.
Yes. Now, before we jump into it, a few quick updates of what we've got going on over on Patreon. Guys, it's a big month. We are doing Rites of the Starling chapter chats. This is the sequel to Shield of Sparrows. And if you're not familiar with our chapter chats, that is a tier two exclusive where we read a book and stop every few chapters and give our real time thoughts. You can read along with us. It's been so much fun to read this book with you guys. We are having the absolute best time. So if you have already read Rites of the Starling and want to relive it with us, or if you are in the Rites of the Starling journey, the sequel to Shield of Sparrows, hop on over to Patreon. We would love, love, love to have you. Also this month, we have our Mass Masterclass in preparation for ACOTAR 6 and 7. In full swing. We are covering the fun fan theory, is Caltaine Bryaxis? So you can find that and so many other things coming your way this month over on Patreon, as well as, of course, all our episodes a day early, ad-free, and the full video episode for Tier 2. So come and join all the fun over at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast. We can't wait to see you there. Now, Anna, take us through how these KU episodes work.
Yes. So we are here with a book recommendation episode. And the way this goes is there will be no spoilers. We will give little summaries, talk about our thoughts and feelings on the book, but it's more just to entice you to read them and see if it's something that strikes your fancy.
Yeah.
So with that being said, Christina, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah.
I would love to. Okay. Well, friends, it's not a KU Rex episode of Christina Zabria Catherine Callis book. It just, you know.
Yeah. It has to happen.
Has to happen.
You know, if I'm listen, nothing but predictable.
So like what we like, so we're not sorry about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Don't apologize.
We get what we get. We don't get upset. We like what we like. We don't get upset. Okay. And yeah, as we talk about a lot in our KU Rec episodes, these books are our palate cleansers. They're our like happy reset space books. Mm-hmm. And because, as you all know, our job is to read romanticy, a lot of times these books fall under the romance category. So
yes.
If you're a longtime listener, you do know that my idea romance category is sexy danger. So that is where we will be beginning today.
That's right.
We are going to start with the sixth book in the Sparrow Falls series by Catherine Cowles. Kimberlyn Ann has read a lot of this series as well.
I sure have.
And this was such a freaking treat. This is called Secret Haven, and this is the last book in the series, and it's the one we've all been waiting for. It's very exciting. This follows Kyler, or Kai, very hot, and Fallon, or Fal, of the Blackwoods. Okay, so I'm just going to read you the back, and then I'm going to give you the synopsis. This is a weird one, but in a really fun way. Okay.
Stick with us.
I need you to stick with us, okay? Because, yes, they are foster siblings, but I just need you to just
trust the process.
Just hang on.
This sounds like, honestly, this sounds like something that I would read.
And it's like,
color me intrigued.
Sold.
I love the forbidden aspect.
I'm liking what you put down. Okay. All right. So, the first time I met Kyler Blackwood, he was a bruised and battered boy with fire in his eyes and nowhere safe to land. Since the first time he kissed me, he was my best-kept secret, my quiet rebellion, my haven in the storm. But fate forced us apart, making us pretend to be strangers because it hurt too much to be anything else. Years later, time hasn't dulled what we felt, has never erased the way we fit, and when Kai's past collides with my presence, everything shifts. We tell ourselves it's only temporary, that the arrangement is just a means to an end. But with each passing day, the lie feels more like the truth. Okay.
I love the way you narrated that.
So good, okay. Christina.
So pretty much, Fallon and Kai are foster siblings. We have seen them this entire series because the series follows this family. Mm-hmm. And there's always been some little secret connection with them. And I've even DM'd with listeners about this. Like, are they flirting? Am I reading this correctly? That seems like we're wrong, right? Right? Am I right?
Right.
And we were correct. So, yeah. But it's just like been very subtle. And Kim, you even were like, am I picking up that they are flirting? Because Kyler's so protective of her. And you're like, I guess they're foster siblings, but this feels strange that she's going to explore this. And she was like, hold my beer.
She's like, yeah, I am.
We get a prologue in this book, which was actually the bonus scene of the book before this, where we flash back to when they are 15 and they are not foster siblings yet. And Fallon meets Kai, the boy from the wrong side of the tracks, behind the school every day. And they have like secret little meetings and they're falling in love. And he's like a part of the motorcycle gang and he fights in underground fighting rings that happen in this small town.
Yes. Of course they do.
And he's like this bad boy, but he's so protective of her. And they like have this this relationship that they meet and they're each other's secret. And finally they have like their first kiss and they're 15. So it's like that kind of big ultimate kiss. Yeah. And he's got bruises on his cheek and she's trying to take care of him. And he calls her Sparrow. And then later that night, she's asleep in her foster house. Hears some commotion downstairs and she hears Kyler's voice. And she's like, what? He's like her secret. No one else knows about him. And she goes out to the front door and he looks up and sees her and they like lock eyes. And then the mom is like, oh, can you get him tea? And they go in the kitchen and he's like, you can't tell them we know each other. They'll send me away. Like your brother had to pull strings to get me here. And I'm going to have to go to this terrible place in Roxbury. If you tell them that we know each other, we can't know each other. And so then the mom walks in and she's like, oh, this is Fallon. You might know her. And he's like, we don't know each other. And then it flashes to now. And you're like, this has been their past. They have been in love the whole time.
I love this.
It's such a fun, unique setup.
Yes.
Because we were all like, how are you going to do this, Catherine? Like, yes. How are you going to do this? But like, yeah, they were teenagers. They're foster siblings.
Yes.
So it's not, they weren't like raised together.
I love this.
But it is a dynamic in the book that the other siblings are like, what? And some of them are like, we knew it. And some of their brothers are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then Kai has to be like, I've never viewed her as a sister though. Like she is your sister.
Yes.
It is different to me.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. There's a whole arranged marriage aspect that I can't even get into because it's so good.
What?
Wait.
Okay, fine. I'll get into it really quickly.
Okay, fine. Kiss my arm.
Well, you really stood your ground there, Christina.
Yeah, that was that hill you were going to die on.
I actually can't talk about it. If someone says one singular thing, though, I will, of course.
Cannot unless you breathe. If you blink or breathe, I will talk about it. Okay, wait, what? Yeah, okay, it's really cool. So she now is a social worker for kids in the foster care system. And she has a call out to a house and this trailer. And it's Kai's mom. And she is like, oh my God, one, this woman's still here. She's horrible. Mm-hmm. And two, there are three little girls there. And turns out Kai has three half-sisters that no one knew about. Kyler is devastated that they have been in the situation that he didn't know they existed.
Oh, yeah.
The mom has been lying to them and is like, oh yeah, Kai, your brother, he knows about you. He doesn't care about you. No, he knows about you and chose to leave you here. So then she has to go tell him and he's devastated.
Yeah.
And he's immediately like, they are going to come live with me. I need them. I'll adopt them. Like, give them to me immediately.
Yeah.
But of course, like, he has this past, you know? He was a bad kid.
A bad boy.
Like, what would make people really feel good about them going into his care if maybe he were married to someone that everyone trusted that was in the social worker world? Oh, Fallon! So then they get married.
Oh, wow, I love this.
I am obsessed.
I didn't know I could love this more, and I do.
This has, like, all of my favorite things in it.
Yes, wow. And he's so protective of the little girls, and then there's that found family dynamic happening, and then there's danger, because his past comes back.
Oh, the motorcycle gang.
And the fighting ring and the stuff. There's so much danger.
Oh, it's so, so much good. Danger.
Everyone needs protecting, and everyone's sexy, and it's really fantastic.
Everyone is so sexy.
And guys, that's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes, okay?
So there you go.
I am like obsessed with this.
Talk about selling the hell out of that book, Christina. Wow. Like, yeah, I'm upset that we have to finish Wildcard now because I really want to go.
I know. I'm like want to pivot. This sounds
so fun. It's
so fun,
guys.
I love this. The guy who like wants to adopt the kids and he can't because he has to be like married to show the adoption.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
I eat that up. Kim, the book I recommended to you a couple weeks ago, War by Brittany Nicole, that's the whole premise. Is that like
he's the
bad boy enforcer for the team, but he's been like taking care of foster kids. And it's the exact same thing. And it's like so good. It's like the enemies to lovers. You know, we'll get married because we both love these kids and they need a safe home.
Yes, yes.
But like, we don't like each
other. But like, we don't like each other. And this is like my catnip.
I love that.
I am so happy to provide.
That's delicious right
so,
there.
So yes, that was Secret Haven by Catherine Cowles.
I love it.
This is the sixth book in the series. So the other couples are very present because all five of them are there at this point.
Yeah.
And they're all siblings. So I don't think you need to read the other five books. The other couples are just very present. Mm. It's really fun having read the other books, seeing them all. But I think you can definitely read it as a standalone. And then if you from there go back and start the series over, you're going to have a lot of fun seeing little Kai and Fal moments sprinkled throughout. And you're not going to feel like, wait, are they flirting? You're going to be like, oh, this is them. This is happening.
Yep, this is
them. No. And it's going to be really cool.
I will say they're also really quick reads too.
Catherine Cowles is your Brittany Nicole. Like that is.
Exactly.
It just makes you feel happy.
Yes.
All right. So Anna, you're up, little lassie.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, just like Christina, what would a KU Rex episode be if I didn't bring a Mafia book?
I was going to say it's either Mafia or Brutes of Brussels book. Yeah. That's what Anna is bringing to the table here.
Damn, Brutes of Brussels book. If you haven't read it, this is the plug. You don't need me to say, I don't need to say anything else. Just goddamn it, go read it.
Anna, I think you've plugged it enough.
I won't die happy unless Kim or Christina reads it. Like, I just need it to happen.
Maybe for your birthday one year, we can do that.
One day on a reading retreat, we'll play some game or win the trivia something.
Oh, you get to pick a book.
You get to pick a book the other two have to read.
Yes.
And we'd all know what Anna would pick.
Get ready to be railed by five really hot men.
Oh my God, Anna! Was railed necessary? Was railed really necessary?
I mean, there's also world building.
World building.
And story and plot and character development, but also lots of sex.
But also love.
Oh, wow.
Love and railing. Okay. XOXO Anna.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh, God. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, Mafia series.
Yeah.
This is not a white shoes. This series I want to talk about is called The Maid Series, M-A-D-E, by Danielle Laurie. This is an older Mafia series. I have heard about it, and the only reason I have not read it is because book one, I thought was other woman drama. Like, it was going to be an affair situation, and it was involved her sister, and so I was very much, it just is not something that I wanted to read. I am so glad, though, that a listener DM'd me and was like, nope, that's not at all what happens, so please give it a go.
Yeah. Good. Oh, sometimes you just need someone else who's already gone through the journey to tell you. Because you don't. How would you know?
How would you know?
How would you know?
How would you know?
Okay, so the first book is Sweetest Oblivion. The second book is Maddest Obsession. I am just going to quickly read the synopsis for both of them because I do think they have to kind of like go hand in hand. There is a third book. I am just going to tell you right now, the first two books are incredible. The third book was like fine, like very meh for me. I do not think you have to. Like if you read the first two, that's all I ask. Book three is a total pivot. You don't need to read it. I don't think it was as good. So Sweetest Oblivion is book one, and it's Elena Abelli, nicknamed the Sweet Abelli for her gentle, compliant nature, is the eldest daughter of a powerful Italian-American mafia boss in Long Island, New York. Her life is shaped by family expectations, scandals, and the rigid rules of the Cosa Nostra, which is the Italian mafia. Elena's younger sister is arranged to marry Nico Russo, the youngest and most feared don in the mafia world. But when they meet, Elena feels an unexpected, intense attraction to him despite their hostile first encounters and the danger surrounding their families. Nico is cold and ruthless on the outside, yet drawn to Elena's warmth and spirit in ways he doesn't fully understand. What begins as irritation and forbidden attraction deepens into a passionate, dangerous romance that forces both of them to confront their pasts.
Ooh, passionate, dangerous romance.
I know. This is like forbidden love at first, right? Because he's engaged to her younger sister. The reason for this engagement is because, like it says, Elena is the perfect mafia princess. She does everything her family asks. She is very docile and sweet. And she just wants one thing for herself. And she, for the first time, like disobeys her parents and does something crazy, and somebody ends up dead.
Oh, no.
Oh,
you hate to see it happen.
I hate when that happens.
So as punishment, her sister is forced to marry to, like, save the family name. Her younger sister is engaged to this other mafia guy.
Okay.
Got it.
They never get married. I'm just going to say that right now, because the younger sister is, like, totally in love with somebody else and actually ends up pregnant. She's like, by the way, I'm pregnant. So... can't marry this other dude.
Sure.
So then Elena's like, oh, damn it. I guess I have to marry Nico. but they don't, like, she doesn't want to marry him because Nico's, like, cold and ruthless and all these things.
They always are at first.
No.
I really, really loved this book. It was very different from other mafia books, I feel like, because it was very mafia light. Like, the mafia's obviously in the background, but it really, both books focus so much more on the characters. And it's really a story of how they all grow as people and, like, confront their past and are able to, like, move forward in a relationship. It really, there's mafia in the background, but it's like the
It's like our sports.
It's like our sports. It's very much
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. Yes.
And I would even say there's like only a few mafia-ish scenes, and I say that it's more like just meetings with other mafia men. It's very lust to hate to love with them. I just love it. Nico's like traditional mafia guy. I'm a sucker for when there's like the seemingly sweet, docile main female character, and then she's meets the main guy, and she can't help but just like be fiery with him, and he loves it, and he's like, "Don't hide that." Like, I want to see more of that. Like, I love when they feed into it.
Yeah,
it's really, really wonderful. So I loved book one. Book two, Maddest Obsession, was one of the best mafia books I've read to date.
Ooh.
I absolutely love it. It says, Gianna is chaos on two legs. Loud, fierce, a total wild card with a sparkle and a smile that masks deeper pain and panic attacks. She's been shaped by a rough past and even rougher relationships. And when we first reconnect with her, she's shown in book one, she's trying to make sense of her place in a world that's never been kind to women. Then there's Christian, cold, cultured, deadly, ridiculously controlled, and an FBI agent with a compulsive need for order and a history that has taught him to keep people at arm's length. And it says, what unfolds is a slow burn, years-long push and pull.
Ooh!
Christian is like a masterclass in control. This man, it opens with him having a therapy appointment, which happens throughout the books.
We love to see a man in therapy.
And it's like court mandated, I think.
Even if it's court mandated.
Yeah. We'll take it.
We'll take what we can get.
And he's in therapy and he's talking about this obsession that he has with this woman. And the therapist is trying to get him to talk more about it. And then you realize it's Gianna. And he has been like obsessed with her for years, but she has unfortunately had two arranged marriages.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. She is a very much a product of like the mafia lifestyle where her father is awful. Women are trading commodities and possessions. Mm. And she was arranged at a very young age, actually to book one's father, like very old man.
Ew.
Yes. Ew. It's gross. And then he dies. And she kind of gets addicted to like cocaine and partying, and she makes some bad choices, ends up in jail. And basically Nico is from book one is like, I can't protect you if you're not a part of the family. Like, so you have to marry someone in the family for me to protect you, or you have to go back to Chicago to be with like live with your father, who is a brutal man. And she's like, I'll pick the oldest man because he'll die soon anyway. So she marries another old guy. Meanwhile, in between all of this time, she and Christian have all these encounters and things happen where he all of a sudden gets pulled away for business. And then he comes back and she's married.
Oh,
again.
Damn it.
And so like the timing never aligns. I feel like it's really hard to surprise me in mafia books because they're also formulaic, which is actually why I love them.
Yeah.
But she has such a good grasp on writing and creating two incredibly well-developed character stories. And I feel like there is miscommunication, and I normally hate miscommunication in books, but the way that this is done, I feel like is so true to each character's individually, their personality and the traumas that they've experienced in childhood. It makes sense that they just wouldn't naturally open up to the first person they kind of like, right? It makes sense that they would be very hesitant, that their guards are up, that they're, you know, very much protecting their heart. And so the miscommunications that happen feel very natural and don't make me want to shake my Kindle or my book.
Okay, yeah. Well, and that's all we want.
Yeah.
And that's all we're asking for.
And there is like sexy danger, but again, I feel like this is more about two of them falling in love. And normally in a mafia book, like by 30%, you have one of the characters admit they're falling in love and like open up to the other person. And this one is like a slow burn. The author really makes you work for it, for the two of them to really connect on a deeper level. And I didn't hate that. Like, it was really well done. She handles a lot of difficult things well. And the men are not, they're mafia. So they're red flag because it's mafia. But they're not red flags in terms of how they work with the other person, like the way they treat each other.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's really beautiful the way Christian has, even when they're not together over those 10 years, like he is looking out for her. There's things that he does that she realizes later was him taking care of her. And like they end up living across the hall from each other. And it's so cute because she just upsets his world. She's chaos and this like tornado, and he is so controlled. And it's so fun to see him snap and like break, you know? And he's,
she's
the drug he can't stay away from. Like,
ooh, yeah.
It's so good.
Love it.
It's just, I love it. Sweetest Obsession, Maddest Obsession by Danielle Laurie. Book one and two were chef's kiss. Amazing. Cannot recommend them enough.
Yay! Love that, Anna. Love a mafia moment. Okay, Kim, what do you got for us?
Okay, so I have a book by one of my favorite romance authors, Elizabeth O'Rourke. Yay! Elizabeth O'Rourke is kind of my Catherine Cowles, Brittany Nicole. I have read almost every book she's ever written, and this is book three in her The Favorite series, and it's called My Favorite Fake Romance. And Christine and I talked about book one, My Favorite Bad Decision, in a other KU Rex episode. And
we so good.
Loved
Incredible.
It.
Incredible. Yeah.
Would still highly recommend. That book is probably still my favorite in the series, but this one was also really good. This is a second chance romance following Easton and Elijah, and they grew up in the same town together, obviously. Easton is best friends with Elijah's little sister, and Easton has always had a crush on Elijah, but he's like 4 years older, and so he comes back from college when she's a senior in high school, and they have this like night together, and she thinks like, finally, we're going to be together. And he ends up breaking her heart.
Aww.
So she's like, well, fuck you. You're dead to me. Every time I see you, I'm going to make sure that you know that I hate you. So she moves off. He stays in town. He is the construction owner of the in book two. It follows two people who are renovating a home, and Elijah is their contractor.
Oh,
so you meet him in book two, and immediately I was like, this is going to be the main male character in book three.
Yes! When I was reading book two, I vividly remember texting you being like, he feels important. Should I be clocking this person?
Yes, you should. Yes, you should. Yes. So, okay, years later, Easton and Elijah have to go on a road trip together because the little sister, Easton's best friend, Elijah's little sister, is getting married in New Orleans. And they live, I don't know, let's say South Carolina. I can't remember. Somewhere like that. And he's like, hey, so my grandmother can't fly because she's too old. But she can drive in a car for like 7 days, and you're a doctor. And she's like, well, I'm not a physician. She's like a scientist. And he's like, well, same.
Nope.
And you're going to ride in the car with us. And this grandmother hates Easton, hates her, because she's from like the trash family in town.
Mm.
And they're from like the well-to-do, like very all-American family. And Easton, like, she has these brothers who are criminals and horrible, and her dad is like abusive to her, and it's terrible. And so the grandmother doesn't like Easton. Plot and other reasons, she decides to go. And so they take this ridiculously long road trip. Hijinks ensue. They end up fake dating to make her ex-boyfriend jealous. There's lots of tension
I
and
love
banter.
It.
Yeah. So the one thing I don't love about this kind of happened to me in book two, Christina, I'm curious if you agree, but if the female main character is dating or married to somebody else at the beginning, mm-hmm. Elizabeth will make that character so like one note villain mm-hmm. that I'm literally reading this being like, why are you with this person? Or why do you want to get back together with this person? Like, they suck so bad and there's no redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
Like the husband in book two, Christina, I felt
100%.
Like, so awful that I'm like, why would you ever be married to him?
I absolutely had that moment in book two where I was like, there's literally zero redeeming qualities about him.
Yes. Yeah. So that is kind of what happens in this book is, Easton is dating a famous scientist. I'm putting that in quotation.
That's hilarious.
I'm not saying they don't exist, you guys. But it's, so that's my only kind of, it just makes me kind of question the female main character when, like, she wants to get back together with this guy, like, basically the whole book. And I'm like, but why, though? He sucks.
And that's the thing. Like, I understand the use of a one-note villain X for the use of, like, he didn't deserve you or, like, what? Oh, my gosh. Like, let me make you feel special and sexy and loved because you don't feel like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
using him for that is good. But it's when the girl wants to keep getting back with him is when it's the problem. Like,
exactly.
Just use it as an X.
100%.
Enhance this current romance, but don't make her want to get back.
Yeah, because that makes her seem stupid.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
She does, spoiler alert, come to her senses.
I'm sure.
But overall, I do just love this series. Elizabeth O'Rourke is one of my favorite romance authors. The favorite series is definitely more rom-com-y than her other books. They're like very angsty, deal with a lot of heavier topics. This one, I do feel like she combines that more rom-com-y feel with some heavier topics. Like I said, there is some like familial abuse. It's not graphic, but it is talked about. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. I think if you've read the series, I would highly recommend it. But I still think my favorite Bad Decision book one is like my ultimate favorite, mm-hmm. which is hilarious because it's like hiking, you know, Everest, basically.
It's so good. It's so
incredible. It's so good. It's so good. Okay, so that is My Favorite Fake Romance by Elizabeth O'Rourke. Highly recommend.
Love it.
Whoa!
Christina.
Okay, Christina.
Okay. Oh, back to me. Okay, friends. So I'm going to run us through Direbound by Sable Sorensen. I realized that I had mentioned this in a few things in our book awards episode, but I never really like gave you the pitch for it.
Good.
So we're going to pitch it, okay?
Do it.
So my first big thing here is that I went into this book knowing nothing. I knew absolutely nothing. I did not read the back jacket cover, and I suggest that path. There is something on the back jacket cover that I think actually ruined a reveal for me.
Okay.
There's something that, like, isn't that big of a deal in the grand scope of things, but knowing nothing, that was a fun reveal for me.
Okay.
Something that's mentioned on the back jacket cover.
Yeah.
So I am going to read it. I'm just going to leave that detail out.
Got it.
Okay.
So, only the worthy survive the bonding trials. She'll risk her life and her heart to be one of them. Maren Cooper has always hated the bonded, the elite warriors who form mental links with the massive, vicious direwolves they ride. While they live in luxury, Maren struggles to keep her family out of poverty. When her little sister Sayla is kidnapped, stolen across the border by the immortal monsters her country has spent centuries fighting, Maren's world falls apart. Desperate to cross to the front to save her sister, Maren enlists in the army and is thrown into the deadly bonding trials, where any mistake will cost her her life. Now, Maren must survive 4 months of training at the castle. She's bound to a feral direwolf who refuses to communicate with her. The other trainees would love to spill her common blood, and her cold and beautiful instructor, Stark, is eager to punish any weakness.
I'm so excited to read
this.
Wow. I'm going to just tell you right here, this isn't super duper original. You're going to read this and be like, Fourth Wing, got it. Hunger Games, got it.
Love that.
There's tropes and tropes on tropes on tropes, but they're done so well. It's like, yes, this is clearly inspired by all our favorite popular romantasy books. Like, I don't think it's trying to not be, but at the end of the day, it manages to do it well. And like, it's a good execution of all of these tropes that are not new by any means.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's so much fun. Like, it's,
that's what
oh
we
my
want.
God, it's so fun. Yes. The world is not too complicated. It is very easy to jump into. Yes, her little sister gets taken. She's kidnapped. And so she's like, well, what am I to do? I must enlist to go to the front. And then there is pretty much a bonding trials. The bonding trials are not all the time. It's like every few years, but it's always a surprise. So whoever happens to be enlisted at that time just gets thrust into them. She just enlists and they're like, surprise, it's bonding trials. Huzzah. And the bonding trials is like one kind of event at the beginning. And pretty much from there, you either die or you bond with a wolf or you survive and then you're sent to the front. So her goal is just to like, I just got to survive this bonding trial, not bond with a wolf, and I'll be fine. I can go to the front and find my sister. But of course, one of the most like massive important wolves that never bonds with anyone is like, I want you.
Of course.
But she's like, nope, I don't want a wolf. Please move on. No, thank you. I'm closed for business.
But why don't you want a wolf?
She just wants to go to the front. She just doesn't want one because she's not here for that.
Okay. So by going to the front means that she can maybe get to her sister faster?
She's just trying to get into like enemy territory to hunt in and be a spy and find her sister.
I've been curious about this. Are the wolves, is it like in Fourth Wing where the dragons talk or is it just like a mental bond?
They can talk to you mentally and they can talk to each other mentally.
Okay. But nobody else can hear your wolf?
No, they have like pack mind.
Pack mind.
So like,
okay. That's what
they
I was
can
curious.
Speak to each other.
Okay.
And the alpha wolves can speak to everyone.
Got it.
And there's like some alpha stuff involved.
Okay. I was curious if it was just like an animal, like a pet.
No, it's a very sentient like character.
Got
They're
it.
All like the wolves are their own beings, their okay. own characters, and they have like their own personalities
I
and
love
like everything.
That.
Me too.
There is a love triangle of sorts, and it's really fun.
Oh, I love that.
It's sexy. Like there's steam in this.
It
is not YA.
Okay.
There is sexy times, friends. You're like swoony, you're gasping. I listened to this book and it was such a fun listen. It's duet. It's so good.
Nice. Ooh.
I just had a blast. Like the wolves are great. There's a whole mystery aspect. And
why didn't you lead with that, Christina? I would have already read it.
It's so fun. Everything that we love about all these books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah.
Not classes, but it's training. Like, because once she bonds with her wolf, then you go into like your training to like figure out how to like be a dire bound. Sure. And so there's the different packs, kind of like the different houses, and you're all in different things together and learning stuff. And
Anna, we have to read this. We need to find the time in our schedule and make this happen.
Yes, please. And Fury Bound comes out May 5th, which is book number 2. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
And God, guys, this is one, if I won that competition, I would make you guys read. It is such a fun ride. I had an absolute blast. So yes, that is Dire Bound by Sable Sorensen. Highly recommend.
Love that. Okay, Anna.
Okay. All right, guys. I am so excited because I am bringing you guys another Brittany Nicole book.
Yes.
So Mother Faker is the name of the book.
Love it.
Her MomCom series, which was actually one of the first ones that she wrote. And she did it with a couple other authors. They each took a main female character and wrote a book about her. And she does that a lot. She collaborates with other authors. But it sets up the Langfield siblings. And those are the ones that I love to read, or anything about the Langfields. They are Boston elite. They own all of the different sports teams. Beckett is the GM for the baseball team. And then his brother Gavin owns the hockey Boston Bolts. And the Boston Bolts is a whole other series that is amazing. I totally recommend that one.
Mm.
Now, what's hilarious, listeners, is that this is technically book one in the suggested reading order. I read it last.
Well, of course you did.
The other 8 books first.
Yeah. Okay.
So Mother Faker is book one in the MomCom series. And the whole setup for this series is that it's like basically a mom commune. They're all single mothers. They all live in this brownstone in Boston. And there are 4 moms, 7 kids between them. It is chaos. And the brownstone is absolutely dilapidated and run down. Delia, this one of the moms inherited it from her grandmother. It's a complete shit show.
Wow.
And
I
you
love
have
that.
Beckett, a billionaire, who is absolutely, again, I love the controlled main male character. His life is always in order. And Olivia is the head of PR for almost all of Langfield enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
So he has been secretly kind of in love with her for 10 years. But she's been married and she's had 3 kids with this guy. And so he has dated other women, but he's always been in love with her. And she gets divorced. Her husband's an asshole.
Yeah.
Hence why she moves in with all these moms. They all have their own stories of why they end up where they end up. And they're in this place. Mm-hmm. Long story short, Beckett ends up in a PR nightmare. Somehow it gets out that he hates children, and they're running this whole St. Jude's campaign and all this stuff.
No.
And he's like, I don't hate kids, but it's a hilarious opening to the story where the limo accidentally stops short to not hit a dog, and she falls into his crotch, and he gets kneed in the balls essentially, but by her head.
And, oh my God, I love this.
And he stumbles out and falls on top of the little boy who's screaming, "You killed my dog!" And there's cameras flashing.
Oh God.
And he's
this is hysterical.
It's a great opener. So they're on a business trip in Vegas with the baseball team, and they're drunk. And his father's like, "I'm going to pull the team from you if you can't get your life straight. You need to get married. You need to show that you're a family man." Mm-hmm. So he's drunk. He is telling Olivia what his father said. They both get wasted in Vegas, wake up married.
Tale as old as time.
And he's like, hold on. Before we get this annulled, I feel like this could work in our favor. You live in a rundown brownstone. I will pay to fix it up if you will pretend to be my wife for a little while.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, fine, but you have to live here with everybody. If we're going to sell this, you have to live here.
Sure.
And she's like, but we can't tell my kids. You just have to be a roommate. We are helping you because your house is under construction or something.
Yeah.
And so he moves in. It is, when I say as a mom, I've thought about all of you, especially you, Kim, the house is falling apart. They're eating and paint chips are falling from the ceiling. And he's like, well, I think all of the children are getting lead poisoning.
I know. Yeah. That's just dangerous. I think that's just safety.
Also, can they go live in his fancy apartment?
Yeah, he's a billionaire. Why can't they all move in there?
I know. It's totally crazy.
Right.
Plot. Yeah.
Plot. But the kids are so funny and so adorable. And it's honestly, I don't want to say this is her best book in the series, but I think the reason I loved it so much is I have seen Beckett be so head over heels for Olivia. And she says jump and he's like, how high? Throughout all of the other books. And seeing him in this chaos,
yes.
It's just really fun to see him in the beginning and their story. So I think I honestly enjoyed it so much more because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she writes the sweetest love stories. It's 350 pages. It's not too long. There's all these funny romantic comedy moments that we love. There's a moment with Spanx. When he's after a black tie event, she's very self-conscious about her body. She's had 3 kids. She's not mm-hmm. the super slim model mm-hmm. that she's used to seeing him with. And she's, you know, but all of us wear Spanx. And he's like, pulling her dress up. And he's like, what the hell? And he's like lifting, what the hell is this? Like medieval contraption. And she's like, they're Spanx. Like they hold in my wobbly bits. And he's like, we need scissors. You could be losing blood flow. You've been wearing this all day. Like he's just so sweet and funny and cute. Yeah. And like he bonds with the kids in a really great way. And it's just really sweet. And like the way that he treats Liv, I just want to read this quote from the book. She says, why are you looking at me like that? And he says, I was always looking, Livy. When you were married to someone else, when you were pregnant, when you were a different size after giving birth, I was never not looking, and I always liked what I saw. You've always had my attention. This is just the first time you've noticed because you're finally looking back. And it's just like, so sweet.
I love the nickname Livy. That's Livy. Adorable.
Love Livy.
And like, there's a couple moments with the asshole dad, but like, it's not like in the O'Rourke books. Like, she does not want to get back with him. She realizes he's a piece of shit. He struggles because he knows his father loved him, but it was like a classic billionaire father, too busy to ever have time for the kids. And so he's always never wanted his own kids because he's like loves his job and he doesn't want to repeat the same mistakes. But then you see him like always showing up for these kids that aren't even biologically his, but he's just like loves them to death and removes everything around to like make sure he gets to like Winnie's art show, and he has nicknames for all the kids, and it's just really sweet and fun. And you absolutely should start with this book if you are a reading order girly. I get it now, but I don't think it's like her, I think it's like one of her first books that she wrote in these, all of her series. So I think she gets a better grasp on the family dynamics in the later books, but it's a wonderful introduction and it's very short. It's very fast. I couldn't put it down.
Amazing.
So fun.
That is absolutely such a great pitch. I love, love, love so many aspects of that. That's great.
Yeah.
All right.
Kim.
Okay. So my second book, because I don't think we've even talked about this in a Rex episode, is Slaying the Vampire Conqueror by Carissa Broadbent.
Yay. What a fun one. Kim.
It's on KU.
What a fun surprise. Yeah. What a treat.
This is, if you don't know, a standalone in Carissa's Crowns of Naxia series.
Carissa Broadbent, our queen.
Christina and I read this in the fall, and we did a whole long book chat on it, and we absolutely freaking love this book. This book took us by such surprise. So good, because, you know, we did love Songbird and Fallen for what they were, but they are just tonally very different to Serpent and Ashes, the first two books in the series. And this, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Christina, I think it gave both of us the vibes of more Serpent and Ashes, like very action.
Yes.
Fast paced, things are moving constantly. It's not as character. The character development is, of course, there, but it's just.
The world felt a little more tangible than Songbird and Fallen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited. Absolutely. To read this. She does really good, like little standalones. Six Scorched Roses, which is beautiful as well.
Which is hard for a fantasy. It's very hard to do a standalone fantasy.
Yes.
Yes. Like, well, like, it's Six Scorched Roses is a novella, and it's incredible. I've never read a novella that I'm able to connect to the characters like that one. And I think I read that and I was like, okay, she's different. She's doing something special here. Because this is not easy to do. So I would highly recommend this book. It follows Selena and Atreus. Selena is an Arakesen, which is a cult of the goddess of fate.
Ooh.
And Selena is tasked with killing Atreus because he's a vampire conqueror.
Dun, dun, dun!
Her main whatever cult lady is like, you must kill him. So she goes and infiltrates his army and she's working with him to conquer these different lands. It's like, of course, this forbidden romance. There's very epic battles. It's just, we absolutely loved this book.
How did you deal with the horns?
They weren't there.
What horns? What do you mean?
They weren't there.
I'm sorry. I don't know what word you speak.
I actually don't. I think you got the wrong book. Yeah, there are no horns.
He has short hair and no horns.
That's correct.
I want to read. I need to read this one.
Anna, you would love this book. This gave me the vibes of like Serpent when you just like pick it up and you can't put it down and it's so fast paced.
Another aspect of this that's such a testament to her writing is a piece of being an Arakesen is that you're blind. Like their eyes are kind of taken from them and she wears almost kind of like a Night in the Moth shroud. Like eyes are covered. And so I was like, I don't know how she's going to do this. Like, we got to go to battles. There's a lot going on. We're on treks. We're on missions. And I mean, it is a little heavenly fire. But she can, like, see through her Arakesen magicness, like, threads and pieces and things. And she can see so clearly and so well that actually it makes her even more of a formidable, like, assassin. And all her other senses are so heightened, plus her magic, that she can see, but just in a different way. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really cool to see that weaved in so flawlessly. Like, you're just so in it. I mean, very quickly, you don't even think about it.
Right.
It's so cool.
I absolutely loved it. I think it is such an incredible standalone. I think you could absolutely read this by itself. You don't need to. I think it's, again, one of those things where it's like, would you maybe have a greater depth of understanding and appreciation for certain things that are mentioned? Sure. But none of the other characters are in it. Like, it's just them basically the whole time.
What's the suggested reading order?
Okay, so Carissa says on Instagram, it should be Serpent, then Six Scorched Roses, then Ashton the Star-Cursed King, then Slaying the Vampire Conqueror, then Songbird, then Fallen.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Christina and I did not do that. We actually read this after Songbird and Fallen.
I love it. I love to see it.
But yes, so we were channeling Anna, but I think you could read it whenever.
If you do read this before Fallen, there's going to be a moment in Fallen that's really fun.
Yes.
It was still fun in reading Fallen, but we just didn't, it wasn't as impactful as it would have been if we would have read this first.
Got it.
So true.
I also think that the plot of this is going to be important to Lion in the Deathless Dark.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Okay. Okay. So I have to read that. Okay.
Anna's got some books
to read. I got some books to read, you guys.
I think you're so right, Christina, and I'm so happy that we read this. And I'm just so impressed with Carissa, her ability to, like, write such different types of stories, but they all fit into the same world together. Mm-hmm. And I love these characters. It's just wonderful.
And it's romantic and it's fun. And
it is romantic. It's really, really good. The last thing I want to mention that will be out by the time this episode comes out is that we are all currently reading The Wild Card by Stephanie Archer, which is book 5 in her Vancouver Storms series. And we will have a book chat on that over on our Patreon, available for both tiers.
Yes.
So we're very early days into the book, so we can't really chat too much about it right now. But we love the series.
Gloves Off was one of our favorite reads of last year, for sure.
Oh, Gloves Off was incredible.
Chef's freaking
such good energy.
If you haven't read Gloves Off, go read that immediately.
Another A Marriage of Convenience.
That's right.
Love to see it.
So yeah, if you want to pick that up, we will have a book chat on that.
Yay. All right, listeners. Cheers and happy reading.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticism to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.